The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests, and are not those of Pesmo Radio, its employees or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements of any radio show programs or products mentioned on air, on our website, social media accounts and marketing materials. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to Pesmo Radio, its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing Pesmo Radio.
Are you a songwriter? Are you looking to turn your songwriting passion into a full-time gig? Whether you are just at the start of your songwriting journey or a seasoned industry professional, this show is made for you. Welcome to The Songwriter Show, bringing together songwriting news, interviews, and community. Now, welcome your host, Soronto.
Thank you for tuning in, and welcome back to The Songwriter Show. I'm your host, Sorantos, a solo music artist who's been writing lyrics for as long as I can remember. Words are very important to me, and that's why I'm so thrilled to host this show for you every Tuesday evening. I believe that every song is a story. The Songwriter Show is broadcast live on number one-ranked Pesmo Radio and has listeners in all 206 countries in the world and every state in America. The station is also licensed with ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, SoundExchange, and has partnerships throughout the music industry, including iHeartRadio and exposure to over 300 million listeners. Tonight's first and only guest is Mike Del Judas. I'm really excited to talk to him for a whole 40 minutes here and hear two of his songs. Mike is currently on tour with rock and roll legend Billy Joel. He's a recording artist, singer, songwriter himself, and he was handpicked and hired by Billy Joel, and he's currently on tour with Billy Joel playing rhythm guitar and vocals. After many years of performing Billy Joel's music in his band Big Shot, Mike now lives a dream come true. In October of 2013, Billy Joel was so impressed with Mike's singing, he personally hired Mike to join his band. And now, you can see Mike on tour with Billy Joel all over the U.S. and the world in major arenas and stadiums, including every month at the iconic Madison Square Garden. At present, while still touring with Billy Joel, Mike is releasing brand new music and showcasing his exciting new songs. Mike also scored the theme song to actor-comedian Kevin James' sitcom, Kevin Can Wait. Kevin is featured in Mike's original song video, Mona Lisa 2. Welcome to the show, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm personally super excited to talk to you tonight. I saw you perform live in Phoenix at the Billy Joel concert, and it just blew me away. Your vocals are kind of what I aspire to come close to at some point, but I had no idea how talented you were until that show. It was unbelievable to me.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I don't quite hear myself that way, but I appreciate that. All I do is basically micromanage and hear what I do wrong, but I really appreciate that. Thank you.
No, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about you. I'm sure you get asked about Billy all the time, but let's talk about you. When did you start playing or singing?
I started singing real early. I think my grandmother, told me that from as early as like 3, 4, and 5, I would sing in church and, do some gospel stuff. But I mean, I didn't remember any of that. I just remember me starting kind of organically. We had a neighbor across the street that had a band. I mean, he's friends with my brother, and I used to go to the basement window and look in and just listen to them and watch them. And I think I kind of knew at that point that that's what I wanted to do. So I'd say the singing started probably then.
Okay.
Probably around that time. I must have been probably around 7 years old, 8 years old, maybe 9. Yeah, kind of started there.
It's wonderful. And when did you pick up the guitar? Was that the first instrument you learned how to play?
Actually, drums was the first instrument that I took lessons on. Guitar was second. Probably, I'd say around, both probably around 8 and 9 years old. And I actually, studied drums with the guy across the street. His name was Billy Dwyer. And he was a drum teacher for a lot of people in Miller Place, and he had a rock band. So kind of inspiring to take lessons from them. But I'd say probably guitar probably around 8 or 9 years old. Yeah.
Okay. Is your family musical at all?
You know what? My family was very musical, except that they didn't do anything with it, nor did they. I can't describe it. I mean, my mother would go around the house and she loved like Connie Francis and Barbara Streisand and all different artists and Linda Ronstadt. And she would do like these little concerts for us around the house. And And she would sing to the record, and we would all just watch, and we would always wait for her to go for the big high notes. And whenever she'd do a high note, she'd like go into the kitchen so we couldn't see her do it.
Yeah.
But we'd hear it. She was musical. My father could have been very musical had my mother allowed him. But back in that time period, I don't think music was something that was something that people went to pay the bills. But my father definitely has really good pitch. Definitely played some bass guitar. Yeah, definitely could have went there if he wanted to go there. But definitely you could hear that everybody has a good ear. My brothers both have decent ear, really good ears, actually. My brother Joey has great ears, sings great harmonies, and great sounding voice also. So, you know, he played trumpet in school. So, yeah, it was kind of a musical family, you know, but not, you know, me and my brother and I were the most musical, you know, as far as what we did with it.
Sure.
But yeah, that's so I'd say that. I had an uncle. I had one uncle in the family too that was a sax player, and he was a full-time musician. Now that was, I think, probably the one thing that I looked at when I looked back and went, okay, all right, so you can be a full-time musician. It just doesn't look like it's going to float very well with anybody around me. But one of those things. But
yeah,
it could be done. I mean, he was a great guy. My uncle Jerry Mason. He was a sax player, and I think he actually did play with he did a couple of shows with Glenn Miller and stuff like that back in the day, and he was part of an orchestra, and you know,
yeah,
really good guy, really sweet man.
Okay, what's your fondest musical memory growing up?
Fondest musical memory, it's a lot of, you know, I had a lot of them, but I would probably say two specifically. One was the first talent show I ever, you know, performed in. I did Tom Sawyer by Rush, with a drummer who up to that point had not played on real drums. He only played on garbage cans. So it was interesting, but it was the first time that I actually sang something in front of people. And people, you know, you get the kids, they don't, you know, everybody that doesn't act in a talent show gets great applause, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
But I remember thinking at that moment, wow, you know, like I was really a shy kid. And I think that was the first moment that I felt I could fit in. So I would say that talent show. And then later that year, I actually did an unprecedented concert on field day, a full 45-minute concert out in front of all my peers. And my principal at the time was, you know, a visionary and definitely, compassionate enough, then he allowed me to do something that had never been done in the history of Miller Place where I grew up. So that was nice too. So I'd say those two were like a huge, you know, growing up, they were the two like turning points where I said, you know what, I'm definitely going to do music. I love music.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Yeah. Well, it takes a good crowd reaction once in a while to make you feel a little better and you go, okay, all right. You know, maybe I can fit in now.
Yeah. I get a little confidence. It's infectious.
Yeah. You know, yeah. School was a rough place for me, so I found comfort in music, and I definitely found almost like a protection in it.
Yeah, so it was like your escape.
Yeah, escape, yeah. And also, you know, something that let people look at me in a different light, maybe, and I guess, you know, and made me feel a little more, you know, like I had, I don't know, school was just weird for me. I was never a school person. I was smart, but I just wasn't a school person, you know. I couldn't be put in a box and told to be at a certain time and do this, do that. And I think that's common with a lot of musicians and a lot of people that did actors and things like that. So,
absolutely.
Which I've also done too. So it's just part of the arts. I think people with arts just don't have an affinity really for order. Not a lot of them.
Yeah, but that's what makes you an artist. That's what makes you good at what you do.
Yeah, I would imagine it does add to it, because if I just was never a cookie cutter person, and I didn't know why, you know, people, you know, use the thing ADD now and ADHD and all this stuff like that. Yeah, sure, I could have had that when I was a kid. I mean, who knows if that's the diagnosis that we're throwing on the situation. But yeah, I guess it did define kind of how I was going to be as a person growing up and what I was going to do with my life. So yeah, I would have to agree with that.
Okay. Are there any famous musicians other than Billy that you admire?
Oh, God. We don't have enough time.
How about the top two?
Oh God! I mean, even that's really hard to do. I'll give you a top five, and this is not like in order. In other words,
these
are all people that influenced me in a heavy way. And I would say, I would need maybe more than five. So I'm gonna list them down, but they're not gonna be in order. Nobody's more special or more important.
Sure.
But I'll say Billy Joel, obviously, the Beatles, Elton John, the band Chicago, and the band Rush was a huge influence on my rock side, on that end of me, and what I did with classic rock and that kind of thing. Those people immediately come to mind, and if I sit for more than 20 seconds, I'll think of another 15 that I can. The Bee Gees were huge for me. You know, crazy, but I mean, my first guitar was a Bee Gee guitar. It was a little acoustic. My dad got me with a picture of the Bee Gees on it, and that was my first official guitar. Yeah, it was a Bee Gee guitar.
You know, I'm having like flashbacks listening to you because I'm an 80s child, and it seems like you might be a little bit of that too.
Yeah, definitely. I love the 70s. 70s, I think, is probably my favorite decade overall, you know, as a whole, a decade as a whole. But I think the late 60s were amazing, and the 80s were just incredible. I mean, it was a whole new world with synths and different, you know, it was a whole new world. It was just a completely new world. So having a new world like that, what you did get was you had got different influences immediately that you wouldn't normally have gotten out of the 70s, that's for sure. So it was cool. It was the 80s was a great decade. I could do without the 90s. I was not a 90s fan.
I never was.
But it did shape a lot of the music that, you know, kind of went forward. But I think, you know, as far as it being groundbreaking, yes, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, all those bands, very groundbreaking for that genre. But I think that really that genre was all, the way was paved already in the 70s and in the 60s with, you know, classic rock and roll people that I grew up with. So just kind of placed in a different way. The alternative movement was just a little bit different kind of metal, a different kind of heavy metal, you know?
Yeah.
Or different kind of rock.
Moving on to the topic of like practice, you know, you're touring, you're not touring, you're trying to do your own stuff. How often do you practice? How long do you practice for?
I practice by inspiration. I'm not a person that practices a lot. I practice a lot by work. I like to do a lot of live things. There's something about the energy that you get off other people, and this could be either live virtually or live in front of an audience. But I tend to like to have a little mystery there. I don't want to get too polished at anything. I kind of have this sense of, I want to have this sense of surprise and this sense of like, I have to really think about this and a little bit. And even if it means making mistakes, that's fine because that is the learning process.
Yeah.
You know? So, that's part of what it is. So I think I do like that a bit. I like having that little bit of a whatever. So I would say that I'm doing two virtual shows a week, and I do sit down and practice some songs for those. Hello, Max. Oh, my dog just came over and said hello.
That's all right.
Hello, honey.
Yeah.
Hello, buddy.
What kind of dog?
He's a boxer.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. He's such a sweetheart.
Yeah.
He's on my live show all the time. He's on Live on the Porch on the after show. Every episode, he sits with me, and I feed him a couple of meatballs, and he's all happy.
That's awesome.
He's a happy dog.
Man's best friend, right? Yep.
You ain't kidding. Yeah, yep. they're so faithful. You know, they're so faithful.
They get you active, too, you know, taking them for a walk and just their love.
Well, I think the therapeutic end is what's amazing to animals. That's what I've always found astounding. My daughter has a therapy dog, you know, and it's just amazing. I don't think she would be alive right now if she didn't have this dog. I mean, it's just, you know, having, it's just something about the empathy, the silent empathy and love that they give you is what you're seeking really from humans. But because we've grown in so many years and have so many hangups as humans, you know, we're prevented from really communicating a lot of things that would help us with other humans. But dogs don't seem to have that issue. Dogs
That's just, so true.
You know, animals just seem to give you this energy that you need, not that you want, not that you're used to, not that you're whatever, and they don't talk, which is just amazing. For me, as a, you know, I'm Italian. I mean, I'm just around people that have to talk. Everybody's just talking with their hands, talking with their mouths, doing everything they can. And here comes this animal that can just basically deliver in one single blow, everything that you would have had to go through in a 50-minute conversation with a human to get down to the, you know, the thick of it, of the humanity of it.
Well,
so it's kind of amazing. I love animals.
And their love is unconditional, too. It's not fake. It's not bullshit. It's just, genuine.
You're 100% right. And what's amazing is, like, before, you know, like, my wife went in the other room for maybe, you know, a half hour to 45 minutes, And she came out, but Max didn't know that, you know, she was still here. You know, he had thought that she left. So
yeah.
He was just as excited as if we went out for 15 hours and came home. And he was, you know, his little nub was going back and forth, and he was so excited. It's this little smile on his face, and it's amazing. It's amazing. It is totally unconditional,
yeah.
Which is just unreal. And they just don't live long enough. And that's the sad part, is that
yeah.
animals in general don't, but especially boxers don't. So it's kind of like a race against the clock, you know?
Yeah. Sounds like a song title, man. You should write a song, Race Against the Clock. That sounds like a great
race
topic.
Against the clock.
Yeah,
oh,
about the dog. Actually, yeah, your best friend,
oh,
the dog.
That's a great idea. I like it.
That's really cool. Tell us a little bit about with your songwriting. Do you start with lyrics, music, melody, drums, guitar? Tell us your process a little bit.
The process usually is me fiddling around on an acoustic guitar. It starts there on a piano, but most of the time guitar, but not most of the time. I'd say 60-40, 70-30, because usually, you know, a guitar you could take anywhere with you. You know, you can walk around the backyard and you can write back there, whereas a piano, I'm kind of stuck. I have to go to it. And then the laziness factor comes in, so that prevents more piano songs,
yeah.
so to speak. So the guitar I like to sit with, and usually I'll start going through a little progression, or I'll play a little progression, and I'll hear a little hook. I'll just hear a hook. It usually starts with a progression and a hook, or a hook in my mind and a progression, and then I find it on the guitar, or I find the melody. The melody of the hook is always first. Sometimes I'll have a lyric with it, a lyric line that goes along with that main hook. And most of my songs do have that, where I had like this main, as I'm fiddling through the chorus part, or it may end up being a verse, or may end up being a bridge, because you never know in the beginning of a song, it usually ends up being this one vocal line that keeps coming forward, and that ends up becoming the title of the song. And a lot of times I don't have, it's not like I have material to write for that title specifically. And a lot of times with me is then, because I like to be, I'm very literal when I write. I like to write real. I don't like to, I've been in the day of writing cliche and, you know, I love you because of, you know, whatever works for like a song or doesn't work for a song. Whereas now it's more storytelling. And I think obviously I've gotten that from my, you know, the people that I admire the most and my idols. But I've also noticed that's how music speaks to me the most, is when someone's telling a story. If I can read the lyrics from start to finish without hearing music and still be moved by the lyrics and not get lost anywhere along the way, that to me is an amazing lyric, and that's an amazing song.
Yeah. But
that's something that people, if they just read it, they would go, oh my God, now I got to hear the music to it, right? Because you don't want to ever lose people at any point in the song, lyrically, I think, you know? So I think it's that storytelling thing that I love and appreciate and like to go for myself, and being very literal about what I'm talking about, and not be ambiguous, and to totally not hold back. You know, it's funny, I talked about this last night on the live show, on the after show, joking about it, but you know, to a songwriter, our lyrics are pretty much our diaries, they're our journals. And a lot of songwriters, you know, what we do is, in order to be real, you got to put it out. You got to say how you feel, regardless of the people that are around that are saying, well, did you, you know, was that about me? And are you mad at me because of something? Or you have to be willing to express yourself in some way. And music for a songwriter is expression. It's about expression and getting those demons out, like most people would do in a diary or in a therapy session or whatever. And to me, that's what my lyrics are. It's dispelling all of this stuff, you know what I mean, and getting it out of me cathartically, you know.
You bring up
a great point.
Like, just, you bring up a great point, because you'll put out a song and then all of a sudden you got your friend or a wife or girlfriend mad at you, thinking you know it's like you said, it's not personal. It's not like you're trying
to yell
at them through
personal.
A song.
Usually usually it's a thought or a moment.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean that moment's even going to last. Sometimes I'm just writing down a moment like you would in a diary. And you don't want to have it too scrutinized, because it's kind of like, oh, I just, haven't you ever thought those kind of thoughts in a moment and then gotten over it and been, you know, so it's hard for people sometimes to understand. But I think, you know, legitimately we're capturing, you know, when we write lyrics, we're snapshotting moments. And I think we really are snapshotting those moments that are so important to us at that time. And they can't be dragged over into any other time period, because they were just there for that time.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And so, yeah, they can't really be overly scrutinized. I don't think they should be overly judged ever, because they're moments. And I've always said, don't let moments, moments define your day, and don't let days define your week and week, month, year, lifetime, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's the same thing with lyrics. I think it's, but we have to be real, and it does get confusing, because it could be, you know, every relationship, every, you know, whether it be with your child, whether it be with your mother, your father, every relationship is going to have bad moments, you know? And so I can't write about them because they might get out to the world, but yet you can write about them in a, you know what I mean? That's where it gets tricky. And you do want to be sensitive, because songwriters in general are sensitive. We're hypersensitive to the people around us. All we care about is making sure everyone's happy. But for the most part, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
So it's such a mess to be able to like get it out. Now I got to put my stuff maybe in a notebook, and I have to wait, you know, and see if it's eventually going to cause a problem.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't want to think like that, because then I wouldn't be me, and I have to be me. I think that's the important thing, is staying true to who you are 100% at all times, even if it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. And artists, I think the good and the bad, we definitely know how to be uncomfortable, I think, for sure.
Oh, God, yeah.
So in about a minute here, we're going to hear your first song on the show, Mona Lisa. Tell us a little bit about that song. What inspired it? What do you want us to take from it when we're listening to it?
Mona Lisa was a song I wrote about Christina, who I'm with now. Now, Christina, I've been married 4 times, okay? Like, kind of have the same track record as Billy. But me and Christina, she was my second wife. We were together. I've known her since we were kids. There's a lot of things that go back that far with her. She's the one I go back far the most with. And now we've gotten back together 17 years later after being married. So the song was about her, and definitely about, it's hard in a minute. I know you have a minute and you go into the song, so I'm trying to be as quick as possible. But I would say that, like, it's really a song about us and explains us. In a lot of ways, and what we've gone through in the past, there's little reminiscing moments about, you know, there's a line in the song that says, it's about a Madonna song, and it's very literal, you know? So a lot of it just tells the story basically about that, and how I felt. I think it was all about the energy and the emotion that I felt about us finally getting back together after all those years. And I think it was something that really came forward really strong, really positive. And I'm proud of it. Really, I'm proud of the song. Definitely more of a commercial song than I would normally write. I'm not necessarily one to worry about radio and what fits and what doesn't fit, although I do always respect, the song itself, and that it has to be listenable and manageable, and it does have to have some kind of structure. So I'm not anti-structure or trying to be different, but this song was extremely more of a commercial tune.
Perfect. Okay. You know what? Let's take a listen, and we'll come back and we'll talk about it, okay?
Okay.
All right, Mike. So here we go. Mona Lisa.
Okay.
My sanctuary, my Mona Lisa. You always had my heart, even when we were young. You always eased my worry with just one look I found. So past the complication, it seems so easy. We shed our old religion, the walls are crumbling down. There was no damn good reason for why we let love down. I'm on your inside now. You're in my lost, now found. You make me get so touch the ground. You are my solitary, the one I lean on. I am so captivated by just the thought of you, crazy for you. melt into each other's arms. I'll be your Romeo. Drink me your poison slow. I'm not afraid to fly. Don't let me touch the ground.
Community at www.songwritershow.com. Network with other artists, songwriters, and producers, and get feedback on your original music. That's www.songwritershow.com. And now, welcome this week's special guest.
Well, that was a really cool song, Mike. I could definitely see the vibe of what you're describing with your current wife. Tell us a little bit about, what do you think is the lead instrument in that song?
Piano, for sure. Piano, this song is vibe-driven. I would say the vibe is really what, you know, whatever instrument would have created that haunt. It's a haunting kind of vibe. It's slow. It's all about building. It's all about reaching a climax at the end of the song. And really, you know, that's really what the essence is I think the dynamics and the building of the song. And I think piano worked the best for that. So it's kind of in kind of like a thing where I was thinking, you know, maybe Ben Folds Five or an Abbey Road kind of thing, where just that instrument really and anything else that's around it is just kind of getting lost in it. Some cellos in there, some different things like that. The drummer did an amazing job, Chris Marshak, on that track. And very, very haunting. So a lot of people use the word haunting when they listen to it. It's a haunting vibe.
I could totally see that.
Yeah, and it says what it says. Song definitely says what it says, and it's got its good and its bad. There's definitely there's believability in the tune, but I would say piano would be the instrument that was the song, almost like a Ben Folds Five. I was thinking to myself, like, can we just go in a studio with a piano, bass, drums, and a cello, and can we cut this song without it needing anything else?
Yeah,
and that was really what I wanted to go for, and make the vibe of the song and the building of it to that big climax that it has. Make that be the thing that sells the song, not the overproduction. I've done that in the past. I've overproduced so many things when I was younger, because that's what I listened to, was, you know, music that was produced back in the day. So I think this was about simplicity and about getting the vibe across as good as possible. I think piano did the best on that.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about how do you obviously write multiple songs. How do you decide if it's going to make the cut, if you're going to put it out on your CD or release it to the world? Does your manager help? Do you run it by Billy? What do you have other confidants that you run it by?
The more recent stuff I've written, I've ran like one or two tunes by Billy also, just to see maybe, does the song need a bridge? You think the song needs a bridge? You're the greatest bridge writer ever. You know, let me know if you think it needs one or not.
Yeah.
And he's been really helpful. There's a new song that I'm writing that's just about to be released, and I'm really, really proud of it. And it goes along really well with what's going on right now in the world, and it's called Where Do the Heroes Go? And I sent that to Billy, and Billy gave it a good couple of listens and said, nope, doesn't need a bridge, tells us, does what it's supposed to do, it's strong because of its simplicity, basically, is what he was saying. And I think that's what I've been going for lately. It's more just more simplicity in the arrangements and in the production, and getting more to the heart of the song, really, which is the melody and the lyric to me. That's the heart of the song.
Yeah. One of the questions I like to ask a lot of the guests on the show is scams. So we've all fallen for it. Are there any you want to warn us about, or anything that you've fallen for that you want to share with us? Just because we kind of have to protect one another.
Scams. Right now in the current world that we live in, I would say the biggest scam we face are these reality-based music shows. And I know that some people have gotten great careers, and God bless them for that. I'm not saying this is for everybody. But these shows like The Voice and American Idol, I don't know. I love the fact that we're, as a nation, being able to be moved all at once by watching a performance of these people. But I think the exploitation of musicians and the exploitation of fame as opposed to fortune is a big thing. And I think these shows, we're setting our children up, we're sending 8-year-old kids, 10-year-old kids, our teenage kids whose voices haven't even changed yet. We're putting them out onto these platforms where they're getting judged by judges and critiqued. I mean, it's enough to make these kids probably want to never do it again once they get voted off the show. And 99.9% of them will get voted off the show no matter how good they are.
That's true.
So, and I have a problem with that. I think the biggest scam are these 360 deals that they're called. You know, everybody's talking about the 360 deal. And it's like, basically, like, you're just under a contract. You can't do anything else. You're not making any of the money. They're making all the money. You're just kind of a puppet in this whole little parade of talent that we can, you know, parade around. Whereas, I think back in the day, it was more earned. You know, it was like you had to practice with your band. You had to do live gigs to get a guy to come down to see you from a label. And then you had to do a show for that guy. Crap in your pants the whole time. You had to really put your heart out there and whatever. And then maybe you got a development deal and you were excited about that. And that turned into a record deal, which turned into an advance that you could never pay back. You know, but there was something to be said about earning it. And there's something to be said about time in general. And I tell my son this. My son is a really, really, both my boys are really good aspiring rap artists. Colby records all the time and does his thing. And, you know, what I've noticed in the younger generation is I always try to explain to him, there is a process, and the process is what gets blessed. The process gets blessed. You don't want to start immediately by winning a show or winning this and winning that. Now, all of a sudden, you're really popular. Then your voice changes. Things change, whatever, whatever, and you're gone, and you feel like you're gone forever because your only identity was who you were when you got famous. So to me, it's all about building up to fame. Building up to a place where you are, if that's what you're going for. So when I talk about these shows, that's what I mean. And I think that the slow road process builds character. The slow road process builds
staying power.
An ability to ridicule yourself. And I think that is the key, is self-effacing and being able to see things in yourself that you wouldn't as a 17-year-old artist. Because I remember writing songs at 17. If anybody said anything, I was like, no, I'm doing it this way. You know, pride, ego, all those things tend to go away with time when you realize you are just you're a speck. And so I think it's important that for the scam purposes, that people just stay away from this get-rich-quick thing. And again, it's not like it used to be. When you got found as an artist in the 70s and the 80s, you were rich for the time. You did get, not everybody had good deals, but people, for the most part, had advances, had some money, could flash it around, had money to live on. They sold records, did what they did performances, whatever. Whereas now, you can be famous, but broke.
Yeah, that's so true.
Because we're dealing with an internet world where, you know, I got 30 million views on that video. Okay, well, what do you got in the bank?
Yeah.
You know, like, so being famous and being rich used to be synonymous, whereas now they're not. They're not synonymous at all. And most people are only making money performing. That's it.
Yeah. And now, especially with the virus, no one's performing really. So it's,
that's where the virtual world comes in, and that's why. Yeah. I mean, I thank God, you know, with this, I've been doing Live on the Porch now. I started this 3 years ago, three and a half years ago, in 2016 or 17. I think 17. And that to me was like, that was my way of at home being able to, you know, even when I wasn't working for a week or wasn't, you know, working in the middle of the week, to still be doing something musical. That was my practice, so to speak, that you talked about earlier. And I think that, and I always love with that show, what I love about the Porch Show too, is I'll take requests that I don't know and I'll be figuring it out right there in front of people. And I think that's the process that is, it's lost. It gets lost when you're getting rich quick, or you're winning a show, or you just got seen and you're on a tour now, the American Idol tour. And hopefully these people end up getting careers. Some of them do, thank God. But you got to think of the majority of amazing talent that just got put through the freaking shredder, that literally just got led to the slaughter. And now they think they're no good. They have no careers. They have no nothing. And they all had the same probably possibility or capability with the right song on the right producer to really be amazing and have a great career. So I think that it's cutting careers short. Kind of bothers me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And you know, the truth is, even these overnight sensations have been at it for a while. It's not like sometimes if you have money and you can get thrust into the limelight, but like you said, to have staying power, you got to find yourself as an artist, and that takes time. You know, I've been doing this 7 years, and I'm light years away from what I was doing 7 years ago, even a year ago. And you got to do it for the right reasons, too. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's the process. The process is everything.
Yeah.
You know, that process of growing as a human, because that comes out in your songs. The songs I'm writing now are more real because I went through that process, you know, and I have more life experience. And that, you know, and then you judge yourself in a better way. You kind of judge yourself more, like I said, from in a self-effacing way, which I think is smart. I think it's smart to always look at what we do. And I'm more of the guy that's just like, I have songs just, you know, lined up, but I'm not going to just put them out to put them out. Because I really believe in just giving one song enough legs. You want to have a song, if you think it's great, well, then do everything you possibly can with that one tune to get it to as many people as you possibly can before you move on to your next. That doesn't mean you're not going to be writing and recording and doing all that, but that's what I've done. And my next song is always usually like, it could be sometimes 6 months to a year after the last one that I do. But I dump a lot into that. You know, into sure. that time period, and I'm writing the whole time. So now, if I have to record an album in a short amount of time for a label or anything like that, now it's all in the chamber. The bullets are all in the chamber.
Yeah.
You know,
Mike, tell us your website. Where can people contact you if they wanna? Where can they buy your music? Where can they hear about you? Give us whatever information you want to share.
Okay, Michael Del Judas. My full name .com is the website, and that handles everything pretty much, from the Billy Joel stuff to my original stuff and all that. Mike on Facebook, Mike Del Judas and Big Shot, celebrating the music of Billy Joel. That's our band page, our fan page, and that's where I do the Live on the Porch shows, which are every Wednesday and Saturday at 8:30 p.m. But I'm more of a Facebook person than I'm on personally.
Okay. And tell us about this Facebook show.
Oh, yeah,
show.
I'm sorry, the CDs, the songs. CDBaby.com, iTunes. Those are, I think, pretty sure the platforms. Mona Lisa, the new song, is actually out on iTunes as a single. Ordinary Guy has also been released, like re-released through Sony now, also that it can be gotten on iTunes.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about this Facebook Live show. Where can people find that? Do they just look up your name on Facebook?
Yeah, if you go on Facebook, it's a public show. It's open to public. And if you're on Facebook, you can see it. It's just, you go to Mike Del Judas and Big Shot, celebrating the music of Billy Joel. That's the page. You find that page, you like that page, you immediately sign up for notifications, and you'll be notified, you know, when I'm doing live performances or we're doing band performances or anything like that. And that's every Wednesday and every Saturday. And that could be found on that channel.
Okay. Are you more of a Marvel guy or a DC guy?
Marvel.
Marvel. Okay. Who's your favorite Marvel hero?
I like the Big Rock guy.
Oh, the Thing?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't follow it a lot, but I remember from being a kid and going, man, I mean, I wouldn't want to mess with this dude, you know?
Yeah.
And now Hulk is a Marvel guy, right? Hulk's Marvel.
Hulk is too, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I go with them. I got to go Marvel because I guess that's the roots and that's what I watched growing up. So, yeah, I'd go Marvel.
Okay. You got any hidden superpowers you want to share with us?
I wish I had telekinesis, but no, that would be a great one. That's the one I've always wanted. I watched Modern Problems with Chevy Chase when I was a kid, and I was like, I think that's the one I want, you know?
Yeah.
But I would say it would probably be the ability, I don't want to say, it's not a, I don't want to say psychic. I've had some pretty major prophetic moments where I saw things major that happened that before they happened, and had pretty much details and that kind of thing of things that I should never have had details for, but things like that. So I think I would say intuition would be the one. I would say gut intuition and listening to the universe, listening to what's out there in the universe.
Okay. How about the strangest compliment you've ever gotten? Anything come to mind?
I've gotten a lot of weird things over the years. Strangest compliment. I don't know. That's a tough one. I got to sit on that one.
Okay.
I would have to think, because we've done a lot of, since social media started, the whole comment thing is just, you know, every night's 5,000 comments. So it's like, yeah. You know, I would have to really seriously sift through all that stuff and see what it would be. But I have people that literally interview me on, you know, basically I could tell they're interviewing me by asking me questions on social media and on the after shows and things like that. People just wanting information. Yeah, I mean, you know, you always get some fanatical things, like over fanatical things and hyper fanatical, I should say, where people go a little too far.
Sure.
And they may be stalker, not stalker, but that mentality of getting a little too close or trying to get a little too close. And at that point, it's kind of when I pull the reins back.
Yeah.
And deal with it. I don't ever not deal with something. I always deal with something. It's, you know, and I never want to be misconstrued or misunderstood either. I try to make sure that I'm pretty honest about everything. The after show, the Live on the Porch after show, definitely is that. It's all about just being human and being real.
Yeah.
It's tough though. Fans, I have really dedicated fans, and it's a built following. And I mean a built up following from the time I started playing piano bar when I was 17 years old. So these people are still with me, and then their kids, their grandkids, and a bunch of new kids. So it's really been, I have a very loyal fan base, and I'm really blessed for that. Really grateful for them. Without them, there is no show. You know, they're the ones tuning in and watching, and they're the ones supporting and doing all that stuff. So,
yeah, absolutely. What about the coolest road trip you've ever been on?
That would have to be. I would have to say that's the first road trip I ever went on with Billy. That would be it. That when I got hired, 2013 to Europe. No, it's like I won't say craziest, but that was the best. That was the best. Best moment ever as far as traveling and doing music. We did five different shows and five or six different shows or something in a 2-week period. And I had just gotten in the band. So there was that excitement and that the newness of that and hanging out with the guys and going to the pubs in Dublin and drinking a pint of Guinness and laughing till the wee hours of the morning, sitting with Billy in the middle of a hotel lobby with the guys around a piano doing harmonies and singing doo-wops. And as far as career goes, I would say that first trip to Europe was life-changing for me, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I never really liked to fly on an airplane before that because I just hate airplanes. The whole concept of it just freaks me out. So, but that was it, really. I would say that would be the trip, Europe 2013 with Billy. That would be it.
Awesome. All right. Tell us a little bit about what you got in the pipeline for this year that you want to share with us. What's like the most exciting thing you're looking forward to?
The most exciting thing I'm looking forward to is just human beings and the earth getting back to a place where we can even have this conversation, because a question like that is really hard to answer that right now when there's so much, you know, like uncertainty on the planet. So there's really no way to base a timeline on anything right now. But, I would say that it would be right now for the next 6 months, because I'm going to assume the worst, which I usually do, and I hope for the best. But I would say that we're probably not getting back to work until the end of the year, especially musicians, because we social gather more than anybody.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to be the last ones to come back. We were the last ones to go in, last ones to come out. So I think that's going to happen. So for me, it's going to be focusing on writing, recording, and doing these virtual shows, introducing the public to new songs live, right on Facebook, which I've been doing. That's how I'm getting a really good sense of what songs work and what songs, you know, work better than others and which ones are getting more feedback. Doing that, finishing recordings, videos, doing some video work for the songs, and really making it, the next 6 months a real virtual quest to do everything that I would normally be doing in both worlds, but just be doing it in the virtual world.
That's awesome, Mike. I got to tell you, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I'm so happy we're able to talk about your music. I'm sure you get pestered about Billy all the time, but can't wait to share your information on my socials. And I think you have a great message. You're doing a great thing, and I wish nothing but the best, my friend.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And now we're going to hear your second song. We're going to take a listen to it right now.
Okay, you got it.
All right, Mike. Have a great night.
Thanks. You too, brother. Thank you. God bless.
Just a child of 15, she got eyes like the deepest sea. Far from the girl I used to know, seemed like only just a minute ago I was tucking you in, saying our prayers. Brush the knots from your long brown hair. Felt so close in a one bunk RV. Wizard of Oz is playing on the TV show. Me, all of the years seem like days. I'm calling out for sunshine, but I'm staring at the rain. And it's all wrong. I've been holding on too long. If it takes forever, get you right where you belong. And it's all gone. All the innocence is lost. Every day's a treasure, and nothing lasts forever, don't you know? Up, it all seems money grows on big dreams. Moving around from town to town, finding it hard just to settle down. A few more years and start to see, no more girl but young lady. Far from the girl she used to be. Jersey Shore now playing on the TV. Do what you need to do. I hope all the dreams you're chasing come running after you. And it's all wrong. I've been holding on too long. If it takes forever, get you right where you grown but feel alone. When the things you thought you'd known begin to crumble. When you're on the stormy sea, let it take you to your knees. Don't worry, all wrong. I've been holding on too long. Every day treasure, nothing lasts forever.
Well, that was another special song from Mike. I want to thank him again for being on the show tonight. Well, that wraps up another show for us. To any listeners out there who may be artists, if you wish to be on the Songwriter Show, I invite you to please reach out and email me. Thank you again for listening. I hope your own unique story gets heard around the world. My name is Sorantos. Please join me every Tuesday night to hear other amazing artists share their fascinating behind-the-scenes stories right here at the Songwriter Show. And tonight, as usual, I'm going to leave you with one of my songs. This is a song that just came out today, and it's called Mother's Day. Obviously, I think that you can tell who inspired this song. Thank you for listening, and have a great night.
You always wore an eager smile. I don't know how you had such style and still got it done. Believe, you always believed and made sure. You just always had the cure. Yeah, you get it done.
www.songwritershow.com and join our free music community of artists, songwriters, and producers. That's www.songwritershow.com.
Thank you for choosing Pesmo Radio.